Okay, welcome to MadOgre.com's podcast number 3. This is going to be our first car cast, and we're going to be talking about the 20 greatest cars of all time, in my opinion. Your opinion might vary, so feel free to email me what your thoughts are on the matter. There's a lot of great cars out there, but in my opinion, if you're going to take a top 20 like Automobile Magazine did, they listed their top 20 cars of all time, and they had a pretty good selection, but some of them I disagreed with, some of them I did agree with, and there were some notable absences in that list of theirs. And not to besmirch Automobile Magazine at all, they're one of the best car magazines out there, but I've got a difference of opinion. Number one, greatest car of all time. I'm not going to do the countdown thing. Okay, we're just going to give it out here. Really, I don't have it in any order. So you can rearrange this order however you want. But here on my list, number one, I have the Ford Mustang. And when I say the Ford Mustang, I'm not talking about any specific model year. Like, you know, the 1987 is the best Mustang or whatever. No, I'm not going to do that. Just the Ford Mustang as a platform, as a car, as a series. It's fantastic. The car is the avatar of the whole American car industry. It's rock and roll, it's baseball, it's apple pie, all rolling in a V8 powered muscle car. It is fantastic. It's had its bad years. During the Reagan era, you know, we had the Mustang II, but then again, every car during the Reagan era was pretty much nasty. The Mustang II was a fiasco. It took a long time to recover from that. A long, slow process, painful process. But what we have now, this latest generation of the Mustangs, is perhaps the best Mustang that Ford has ever made. It is right on par with the original Mustangs. Got a lot of improvements in the engine management, suspension, all the controls, the interior, and even the build quality. It's all very much improved. The Mustangs now are, they're faster, they're safer, if that's one of the big things that you're after, you like the safety aspect of the new car. The new Mustangs are safer than the original ones, which had a problem with the gas tank in the trunk, where, you know, a rear-end collision could actually cause fuel from a ruptured tank to splash onto the, you know, into the interior of the car. Not a cool thing. That's been remedied. One thing that hasn't been remedied about the Mustang, though, something that they're still doing, like what they did in the original Mustang, they're using a live rear axle. This is retarded. Covered wagons use the same technology for the rear suspension. This is just absolutely absurd. Ford needs to step up if they're going to make the car cutting edge. I don't care about the tradition. Nobody gives a damn about whether or not the Mustang has a live rear axle, just like the original. What they care about is the car a performer. It is, but it could be much better if it used an independent rear like everybody else making serious cars these days. I mean, come on, a live rear axle, get with the program, Ford. You need to step up and do it right if you're going to do it at all. You're making good progress, you're almost there, but the next generation of the Mustang, let's clean up the act and do it right, okay? And then you're going to have a world-class car. Everything America stands for, right there, with no Achilles heel, okay? Number two on my list, the Volkswagen GTI. I love this car. I love the GTI. The new GTIs are great, but unlike all the other ones, I do have a favorite year. The 1984 Volkswagen GTI was fantastic. It had the lighter rabbit style, but it had the multi-valve, dual overhead cam, 16-valve engine. It, you know, that was in the Golf GTI that everybody loved. The 84, using the rabbit body style, it had all the go power, but it was 500 pounds lighter. That was a fantastic sports car. I lived through college by racing for pizza money in that car, racing up Provo Canyon. A Provo Canyon and back, winner take all the pizza. I used to win all the time It was a fantastic car. You can't do that kind of race anymore now because they got all the construction in the canyon. They've straightened it out. It's not nearly the fun that it used to be. It used to be a great road to race on, but now it's just crap. But the car, 1984, if you can find an 84 GTI, get it because that's a good car to restore. It's a great sports car. Number three, the Mazda Miata. Now, the Mazda Miata as a sports car is pretty mundane. It makes no great strides in any performance category, but the car reinvented the sports car to the chagrin of Top Gear magazine. It proved to be that you could have a real sports car without it being British. It doesn't have to be British. It doesn't have to break down on a weekly basis, and you can still have a fun sports car. It was also cheap. When it first came out, it was right around 14 grand. It was fantastic. Nobody else was making anything like that. At least nothing that you could get in the U.S. as a new car. Number four. Another Ford. This is the Bronco. This is the full-size Bronco. I'm loving it. This is on my list. This is my personal favorite. You might have something else. Maybe a Blazer. I love the full-size Ford Bronco. Not the Bronco 2. Not that little pansy thing that was a little top-heavy, like the flip-over. No, the full-size Bronco. It has great flexibility, great capacity. It has the ability to work, to play. It has a tight turning radius. It's easy to live with. It's a fantastic vehicle, but Ford pulled an OJ on it, and they killed it. Ford killed it to force buyers into the new Expedition, which is, I think, not quite as good of a vehicle. It is if you want all the seating and all that jazz, you know, the big SUV thing. But the Bronco, it had some qualities that you're not going to get in an Expedition. For one, on an Expedition, you can't take the top off of it and turn it into a really big Jeep Wrangler. Okay, you can't do that with the Expedition. The Bronco, you can. It's a fun vehicle. You can do anything you want with it. It's going to go anywhere. It's going to do everything. It's the ultimate urban vehicle. It just is. You can tow, you can sport around, take the top off, and play. It's just fantastic. Nobody else is making anything quite like it. Except the Humvee. But that's another story. Anyway. Moving on, number five. The BMW M3. Not the 3 Series, the M3. The 3 Series is a nice little car. They're great. But the M3 is something special. It gives you a high-performance package that you can live with every day. You can drive it as a daily driver. You can race it on the weekends. You can carpool with people from your office. The M3 is just fantastic. Also, it has always been fantastic. Since the first M3 to the current, they're always solid, good cars. They never screw up. BMW has too much stock into the 3 Series, and they put too much stock into the M Series. And the M Series is like Ford's SVT, Chrysler's SRT division. The M means something to BMW owners. And the M3 is and has always been and hopefully will always be a very special vehicle for people who take driving serious. Okay, number six. Now, this one I debated whether or not to put onto the list, but I went ahead and did it anyway. The Porsche 911. A lot of Porsche fans out there are fanatic about the 911, and pretty much any year, any flavor of 911, it's always delicious. But the car is the classic flawed hero. The 911 was first carved out of stone by Germanic barbarians, and the 911 has been under continual development since. Major flaws of the car is that the ass end wants to become the front end because the engine is hanging out there over the rear axle. And if you're not careful with it, it's going to kill you. Pretty much just like the designers themselves. But every year, the 911 gets angrier, it gets faster, it gets quicker, and it just flat out keeps getting better every year. It also keeps getting more expensive, but that's another story. Great car, the 911. It's a fantastic sports car. If you are a serious driver dedicated to vehicle dynamics, studying and knowing your car, you can do great things with it. That's why it's on the list. That, and it's one of the sexiest cars ever made. It's fantastic looking. It looked good. the original. It looks good today. It's just a great looking car. Another Porsche's on the list, but I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. Right now, number 7, I've got the Jeep Cherokee. Not the Grand Cherokee, not the Wagoneer, no, the Jeep Cherokee. The one that they ended, the one that they killed off, the one that they replaced with the Liberty, saying to American audiences that, no, this isn't a replacement for the Cherokee, this is just something different. Yet they sell the Liberty overseas, they sell it as the Cherokee. Go figure. I don't know why they have to lie to Americans to think, oh, this is the only way we're going to get people to buy it. But the Cherokee, you're seeing them all over the place because they're still great vehicles. The Cherokee is, in my opinion, the daddy of the SUVs. It's the father of all SUVs. It's an icon of what the SUV is all about. You got the little 2.5 liter. I've got one of those. Don't drive it, but I still have it. You got the 4 liter. It's an inline 6. They're great vehicles. But don't think about the V6 versions. Forget it. The factory V6s were pretty much all crap. But this is a vehicle that can go anywhere, do anything. It's just phenomenal. All the utility, the flexibility. That's what puts it on the list. It's fantastic. Number 8. The Datsun 280ZX. This car changed the opinion of what a Japanese car can be. Everybody had, back in the day when the 280ZX first came out, Japan was pretty much cranking out boring little Econoboxes. Then here comes the 280ZX, and you're like, well, wait a second. This is a neat car. This is a fun car. It's a good-looking car. And it spawned a lot of lookalikes. A lot of that shape that the 280ZX had when it first came out has been copied by a lot of other people. Porsche 944, the Toyota Supra, they kind of had that same look that the 280Z. Maybe I'm wrong about it being the first one that looked like that. I still like the Datsun 280ZX because it changed people's opinion about what a Japanese car could be. Number 9, another car that shook things up. The Ford GT40. I don't know why I have a lot of Fords here. I've got another one on the list too down here at number 11. And do I have any more Fords? No, I don't. The GT40. Ford decided we're going to make a name for ourselves. We're going to build a car that's going to crush the world, specifically Italy. We're going to kill Ferraris in the competitions. Ford set out to do it, and they did it. The GT40 is one of the best-looking cars ever made. It's gorgeous. The new Ford GT builds on that same look, touching on that tradition, the way the new Mustang touches on the original Mustang. Ford has a habit of doing this. They build something great, and then they decide to change it or kill it. Either way, they get something great and they ruin it. This is pretty much Ford's business model. I don't know why, but this is the way they do things. The GT40, you're going to have to look that up yourself. There's so much history about it. And you can get these kit cars that you can build yourself, and they're actually better than the original. But that's anytime you see one, you know, you're rubbernecking to keep your eye on it. Get another glance at it because it's just that good looking. It's that special. The GT40 or the new Ford GT, outstanding. You just gotta love those things. Number 10. This is the Cooper Mini. The reason the Mini hits this list is because it embodies the very essence of its home country. It's very small. It has small wheels and tires. It's underpowered, but it's very pushy about its own significance. The car is fun to drive, but then again, so is a go-kart. And I really couldn't tell you which one I'd rather take into traffic. But, I mean, nothing says the UK more than a Mini Cooper. And this could be the originals or the new Minis built by BMW. Take your pick, either one. Number 11, the Ford F-150. Out of all the vehicles in the world, this is the king of the cars. It's Ford's bread and butter. It's the truck that sets the benchmark and what everything else is measured by, and buck for buck. These are the best trucks. You might have a difference of opinion, but this is my opinion. That's why you downloaded this podcast, to hear my opinion. The Ford F-150 is the best pickup truck, period. And the new versions, and this is what puts it on the list are the four-door versions, and I just love them. I absolutely love them. They give you lots of interior space, gives you lots of capacity for cargo, people, everything you want to do. You can do it in the new Ford F-150. That's what puts it on my list, because it's the closest thing to the Bronco that I like. So whatever lifestyle you have, you can do it in one of these four-door Ford F-150s. And what makes it great is that you can just get this, you can go do whatever you want to do with it, and you don't have any of the pretense of being extreme outdoor like the owners of Pathfinders and Xterras. You don't have the arrogance and haughtiness of the Land Rover type owners. And, you know, you don't have to have that tree-hugging, crystal-gripping, self-centered, holier-than-thou posturing of the Subaru owners. It's just kind of like the get-her-done attitude, you know, get-her-done. And it's got a leather interior. Kind of love that. The folks in the UK, they don't get it. But then again, you're talking about people who call pickup trucks lorries. I mean, what the hell is a lorry, for crying out loud? They don't know anything about trucks. Freaking lorries. Give me a break. Number 12, the Nissan Skyline. This is basically pretty much Japan's GTO. It's the Japanese hot rod. Make it left-handed, please. Bring it to the U.S. And even in a limited special run, it's going to shake things up, and it's going to cause a stir. One hell of a big stir. And there are few cars out there that you can compare it to. Maybe a BMW M5 for the size. Maybe the Vauxhall Monaro, maybe. But whatever car you try to compare it to, none of them can really compare to the Skyline, because when you talk about supercars, the Skyline's on the list, and there's nothing else like it that's on the list of supercars. The Skyline's legendary. Maybe part of that legendary status is because they didn't bring it to the U.S. So people really couldn't get their hands on it and really try it out and see how it stacks up. But it's fantastic. Number 13, I just mentioned it a second ago, the GTO, the granddaddy of all the hot rods. This is the font of all muscle car. And I'm talking about the original one. The old classic, like you can see it in the movie XXX, before they James Bonded it up, and in my opinion, kind of ruined it. But just the GTO, you have a small car, you have a huge engine, and that's a good formula. You know, you can have your own opinion about what your favorite hot rod is, but you have to give the nod to the GTO as being the originator of it. You know, I know people have been hot rodding cars. You know, you got the 50s was when hot rods became really popular. But what made GTO special was that Pontiac at the factory said, let's go ahead and put this car out the way people are going to want it anyway. It changed everything. It really did. Before that, factory cars were pretty timid. Then comes the GTO, and all of a sudden things changed. Things got a little bit raw, and power and performance have been on the forefront ever since. Number 14, the Corvette. I've not been a real fan of the Corvettes, but I do appreciate them and what they are for. And any serious car nut has got to give the nod to the Corvette because of the simple formula. Really light car, really big engine, as much performance as you can get out of it, and make no apologies for it. No back seats, nothing like that. It's dedicated. It's dedicated to the mission of going out and ripping it up. Lightweight frame, lightweight body, wrapped around the big engine, good tires. I mean, what car nut would say, nah, that doesn't quite work for me? No, that works because it's the way it should be. But one question I have about the Corvette, even the new Z06 Corvette, which is a supercar into the hands of mere mortals. You know, a middle-aged American, middle income, can afford a supercar. And this is pretty much the first time, really, that you could do that. But even the Z06, how come it doesn't have a mid-engine? How come the engine is still up front? Why is that? We all know better balance, better handling can be achieved if you put the engine in the middle. And the Corvette, it's only a two-seater. What are they trying to prove by keeping the engine up front? Race car drivers, you look at all the Formula Ones, you know, where's the engine? It's behind the driver. That's where the engine should be for a dedicated performance car. Look at the Lotus Elise, the Lotus Exige. Where's the engine? It's behind the driver. Put that in the Corvette. Make the Corvette a mid-engine car, and you're going to have something just absolutely phenomenal. I don't know, that's just my opinion. Your opinion can vary on that, but I think the next Corvette should be mid-engine. Number 15, the Porsche Cayman. This is Porsche's exact middle-of-the-road car between the cheap and light, and I'm talking about in Porsche dollars, the cheap and light Boxster, and then you got the 911, and the Cayman hits right there in the exact center. And the reason it hits in the exact center is because that's exactly where Porsche wants it to be. Because they don't want it to compete with the 911. The 911 is Porsche's bread and butter. They don't want to change that. They have the Boxster, which is really fun. They made it into a hardtop. Oh, and all of a sudden, it's too much car. So they have to detune it to keep it right there in the middle. So just think for a minute what you do. You take that Cayman, you tweak it out, and you're going to have something that's going to compete very easily with the 911. Not only that, it's going to handle a lot better because where's the engine? That's right. The engine is in the middle where it should be. Instead of hanging out over the rear axle, putting all the weight in the back like a big pendulum, trying to kill you. Anyway, your opinion might vary on that. I'm not going to go into that, but I gave you my argument for it. That's my opinion. Your opinion can vary. If you disagree with me on that, go ahead and email me about it. I'll respond to it as soon as I can. Number 16. This is going to be kind of a surprise. The Cadillac CTS, because the CTS made Cadillac cool again. Nobody ever saw that coming. Nobody could see this coming. Nobody could have predicted this. This is out of the blue. Cadillac was kind of a dying nameplate. They come out with a CTS, and all of a sudden, bang. It changed people's perspective on what Cadillacs are. Now you got the CTS-V, you got the STSs, which have come into their own now using the new CTS Edge styling that they have. You got the STS-V, and then you got the little, I forget what it's called, it's the one based on the Corvette, but with the Cadillac styling on it. All of a sudden, Cadillac is on the map for the serious guys. It's no longer your grandma's car, it's no longer a golfer's car, it's no longer that I'm going to retire to Florida type car. Now the CTS is a serious car, and they're comparing it to the BMWs now, which are, you know, universally known as a driver's car. So the CTS changing a whole nameplate, changing a whole brand, and it's just unbelievable. And those comparisons against BMWs, they're not winning them yet. But I mean, when you mention a BMW and a Caddy in the same sentence, who would have thought that would have happened anytime, you know, not in my lifetime, but there you go. Eventually they're going to start winning those competitions too, I think. Number 17, the Jeep Wrangler. Few vehicles have the history that the Jeeps have. They've descended from the military utility vehicles in the 40s. The Jeep is the only vehicle that has seen this kind of constant, continual development for such a long period of time, unlike anything else. And the older ones are just as much fun, and they're just as desirable to have as the new ones. And when I say Wrangler, I'm talking about the whole CJ line, you know, from the original CJs, and, you know, the CJ5, 6, 7s, the 8s, the Scramblers, all the way through to what, you know, the new Rubicons. It's a fantastic platform. They made the formula right, and yeah, they're using live axles like they used to, but then again, they're not trying to be Mustangs and trying to be top performers. They're off-road vehicles. They don't make any apologies for that. What else out there has the same kind of history? nothing I know of in the car world, maybe like the 1911 pistol, the 1911 45. It's ancient, World War II, an earlier veteran, constant development. It's a classic. They look similar for a good reason, because it was good looking to begin with, still good looking today. They made some tweaks, some changes, but overall it's fantastic. It's my number 17 choice. Number 18, this is a Chevy. This is the Corvair Corsa. This is one of Chevy's biggest failures, but I don't think of it as a stain on Chevy's shirt, really. The Corvair didn't let Chevy down. Chevy let the Corvair down. It was a great looking car. I'm not talking about the original kind of squared off Ford Falcon looking kind of Corvair, but the later ones where they've smoothed out and rounded out, made it, you know, gave the shape a little bit more aerodynamic kind of look to it, a little bit more curvy, a little bit more sexy. That car, of course, is the later, the last generation of the Corvairs. Great looking car, had the great lines, it had a good size, and I really think Chevy nailed it in the look and the feel department. But it had some issues. It had some serious issues. Lots of safety issues. It had some handling issues. People, even Ralph Nader, they were very happy to point out to Chevy and everybody who would listen all of the flaws that the Corvair had. But instead of addressing these flaws, correcting them, fixing them, kind of like what Porsche did with the 911, Chevy just, they just threw up their hands and gave up. They abandoned the best looking car Chevy has ever made before or since. It's a beautiful car. If you see one on the road, it's just gorgeous. It's a smooth looking car. I don't even think Chevy's capable of making a car as good looking as the Corvair Corsa. My dad had one. He loved it. It's one of his favorite cars. And I can only imagine, try to think, what would the Corvair be like if Chevy continued to development? The engine was in the back, like the Porsche 911 is. But if you take the 911's progress of development to fix the errors and make the car right, and you apply those same changes, that same effort to development into the Chevy Corvair, Chevy today would have something that would be absolutely spectacular. But as it is, it hits 18 on the list. If I could find one and restore one of those, I would. I'd find it, I'd get it, I'd restore it, I'd give it to my dad as a trophy, as a thank you, because, you know, he had one back in his college days when he was dating the woman who would become my mom. He had his Corvair. Just kind of a family thing. I don't know. His appreciation for it may have rubbed off and has influenced my opinion, but, you know, he's the smartest man I know, so it's fair enough that he has influence on it. Moving on, number 19. The Batmobile. Now, don't laugh. The Batmobile. The original campy TV series version of the Batmobile. It spoke more of the future than James Bond's DB7. The original Batmobile, it was fast, it was cool, it was low slung, it was sinister looking, and it packed all the features, and even more features, that James Bond only wished he had. The Batmobile, it had the jet engine for warp speed whenever it needed. It had an auto drive system so the car could come and get him when he needed it. It packed the video phone system so he could talk to Commissioner Gordon. It had a computer. It had a computer in the trunk. It had a full CSI crime lab in the back of it. Q can't top that. Q never topped that in any of the James Bond movies. Not the Batmobile has it. The Batmobile had it. All it really needed was to get rid of Robin and put in, you know, a back seat. Then it would have been perfect. Anyway, but the Batmobile is number 19. Number 20. Number 20 is the Humvee. In World War II, GIs, they rolled from North Africa into Berlin in these little Jeeps. If you ever catch the TV show Rat Patrol, you got these little tiny Jeeps out kicking German butts and killing columns of German tanks and whatnot. But, you know, there's a lot of fantasy to that. But that little Jeep, you know, that little tiny utility vehicle had a little tiny engine, and the Army had that. And it was such a good little vehicle. The Army had that in World War II. The Army used it in Vietnam. They used it in Korea even in Operation Desert Storm. And the Army still has some of them running about doing, gopher missions and stuff, little interbase roles. The post office is still using them anyway. But when the Army said, let's replace that with something a little bit, a little bit more useful for the military today, they replaced it with the Humvee, which they kind of took that little Jeep. They made it really big, really powerful. They called it the Humvee. It was so good that people kind of named it after Clinton. You know, the civilian version of it, they call it the Hummer. It's so good that, and it's so capable that people are mistaking it not for a big overgrown Jeep, but they're mistaking it for armored personnel carriers, and they expect it to be as tough as a tank, because it damn near almost is as tough as a tank. I mean, the thing is, it's big, it's brutal, it's bad, and it's recognized around the world. Other people are making Humvee lookalikes. Lamborghini had one with a V12 called the Cheetah, I think it was. You know, that kind of had that Humvee look. But other countries and their militaries, they're making their lookalikes. Japan's making them. They're making their own version of it. China is making their own version of it, except it's a little smaller. It's kind of a mid-size. But the Humvee, it gets talked down about in the military because people just don't really realize what it is. Even Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld thinks that this thing is so tough it needs to be an APC. But really, remember what it was. It's just a pickup truck. It gives you this platform. It can be a big Jeep. It can be a pickup truck. It can be armored. It's one of the most fantastic military vehicles ever made in the history of any military, and that's what puts it on my list. You can still buy them today as civilians, civilian versions. Such a vehicle has to hit my list at number 20. But that's just my opinion. So you tell me what your opinion is. Let me hear it. You guys have a good day. Peace out. I'll talk to you guys later.